This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 23rd, 2021, on your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF. This hour, a state senator, once Republican, now independent, is seeking common ground for dissatisfied Republicans and Democrats. Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore talks with Senator Jim Hendren about his plans for seeking a place for people he says want something in between party extremes and a source for leadership on matters he said should be bipartisan, like increasing broadband availability in Arkansas. And in our second half hour, a home for Dizzy Gillespie, foreign films and haircuts. Charlie Allison continues his guide to the first 150 years of the University of Arkansas with a salute to the student union. And after our hour, we'll bring you Here and Now from NPR and WBUR Boston. On today's show, a record number of children heading to camp this summer, along with archery and canoeing. There is COVID testing, masks, and vaccines. That story and the day's top news from around the world on Here and Now, beginning in about 54 minutes on KUAF. A major increase in the number of new cases of COVID-19 in Arkansas in yesterday's reporting. The Arkansas Department of Health confirms 485 new cases diagnosed in the last 24 hours. That's the largest single-day increase in 3 months. 8 additional deaths are included in yesterday's reporting. Hospitalizations increased by another 4 patients. The number of active cases in Arkansas increased by a net of 251 during the past 24 hours. Governor Asa Hutchinson tweeted that until the state increases the number of people who are vaccinated, the state will continue to have increased numbers of hospitalizations and new cases. There are 30 patients in hospitals in Benton and Washington counties with COVID-19, and a press release from Northwest Arkansas healthcare providers indicates the overwhelming majority of patients with COVID-19 have not been vaccinated. The CDC statistics show Missouri has the highest percentage of cases of the Delta variant. And this month, the new cases in Missouri had a one-week jump of 93.8%, with more than 4,300 new cases reported. The Arkansas Colleges of Health Education in Fort Smith will use an anonymous $32 million gift to support a holistic approach to health and wellness and create partnerships with public schools, art centers, and Brightwater, a center for the study of food in Bentonville. The gift will create an endowment to pay for staff, program costs, and construction for the former Golden Living headquarters in Fort Smith that will be turned into a medical research facility and health and wellness education center. Arkansas's Republican governor is voicing his support for federal legislation addressing the disparity in sentencing for crimes related to cocaine and crack cocaine. Governor Asa Hutchinson testified yesterday in front of the U.S. Senate Judiciary Committee in support of a proposed bill known as the Equal Act, sponsored by Democratic Senator Cory Booker of New Jersey. The governor says imposing harsher sentences for crack cocaine ultimately hampers law enforcement efforts to crack down on drug trafficking.
Unfairness erodes cooperation, whether it's the development of informants, to the ability to get cooperation, to the working up the ladder of a drug trafficking organizations. Confidence in equal treatment under the law is the foundation of our rule of law, and it is currently being undermined by that disparity.
Currently on the federal level, crack cocaine sentencing guidelines are 18 times harsher than those for powder cocaine. Hutchinson says that's based solely on the quantity of the drug, which isn't an accurate indicator for how long a prison sentence should be.
We have to recognize that the sentencing guidelines has factors that will recognize the degree of firearm use, whether victims that have been harmed, and the criminal record of the defendant. All of those are factors that can be brought to bear on the ultimate sentence versus using a much more unreliable indicator for length of sentence, which would be the quantity.
Governor Hutchinson, who was head of the U.S. Drug Enforcement Administration 20 years ago, says the sentencing disparity also disproportionately affects Black Americans. Government data shows that in 2019, 81% of crack cocaine defendants were Black, a number that fell slightly to 76% in 2020. The Northwest Arkansas Naturals continue a homestand tonight with a 7:05 first pitch against the Arkansas Travelers at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. The Nats dropped a 4-2 decision to the Travs last night. Clear tonight with lows in the mid-70s. A return to summer heat tomorrow. Highs from 92 to 97. Heat index values tomorrow afternoon, 101 to 106. Thursday night, continued clear with lows from the mid to upper 70s. This is Ozarks at Large. According to a study from BroadbandNow.com, Arkansas ranks 41st in the nation when it comes to broadband internet access. Arkansas State Senator Jim Hendren, founder of Common Ground, an organization with a mission to promote ideas that make Arkansas a better state, says increasing access to the internet for Arkansans is a good idea that should have bipartisan support. This week, Senator Hendren came to the Carver Center for Public Radio to talk with Ozarks at Large's Matthew Moore.
Senator Jim Hendren was a lifelong Republican. Notice I said was. The insurrection on the Capitol in Washington, D.C. left Hendren troubled. And in February, he made a public statement declaring that he would be leaving the Republican Party to become an independent. In addition to leaving the party, Hendren started a new organization called Common Ground.
I felt like there was a need for somebody to form some sort of organization to give a home to people who are not Trump Republicans and are maybe disenchanted Republicans with the direction the Republican Party's gone and really don't feel at home with particularly what the national brand of the Democratic Party has become. So it's more of a centrist area where we focus more on working together and finding leaders who focus on real problems rather than litmus test and ideology.
One of those real problems that Hendren and Common Ground want to focus on is internet access for Arkansans. According to research presented by Common Ground, Arkansas ranks 41st nationwide in access to broadband internet, with over 500,000 in the state who don't have access to reliable, high-speed internet. Other data from U.S. News & World Report ranks Arkansas 47th in internet access generally. The problem, according to Hendren, is we're focusing on the wrong things.
We spend a lot of our time dealing with issues that affect almost nobody and have no real impact on people's day-to-day lives. And then we ignore problems like you just articulated, where we have 250,000 people who have no internet at all. And as you said, 500,000 people who have internet that is not suitable to do real work on. And in today's age, you can't have quality of life. You can't have the ability to do remote work. You can't do education when we have to do remote education, which is getting more and more common, even at the higher ed level. You just really restrict somebody's ability to advance themselves and have a quality of life if you don't have access to quality internet.
Hendren says they have found bipartisan support on this issue, and money is not a problem either. Arkansas has a nearly $1 billion surplus in the state budget. Plus, they will be receiving around $2 billion from the federal government, thanks to the American Rescue Plan Act.
So you have the resources and you have the need. Now it's a question of putting the resources in the hands of the people who can fix the problems.
Approximately $30 million has been approved so far, with another $120 million pending some paperwork adjustments.
I think the legislature took a step in the right direction with the $30 million. I hope that we won't get in the middle of trying to micromanage and delaying the other $120 million that's been requested.
Do you feel like that's enough money, though?
No. I think it's clear that that's not going to address all the problem. And it's clear that it's a problem that's going to, over the next 5 or 10 years, take more and more effort and more resources. So I think it's a huge step in the right direction to get it to at least we're going to have the infrastructure built that we can then take the feeder lines out to and do things more for more rural communities. But we've got a long way to go. We've got a lot of makeup work to do. I think that the $150 million is going to get us a lot further than we had envisioned 2 years ago. But we'll still have more work to do.
Hendren realizes that the reason politicians on either side aren't as excited to talk about nonpartisan issues like broadband access is because it's hard to demonize your political opponent in a campaign ad. He says they'd rather focus on more divisive issues that don't impact many Arkansans.
Well, it goes back to what we talked about at the beginning, and that is right now we have career politicians who feel like their number one priority is getting reelected, which means winning a primary. And in Arkansas, it normally means winning a Republican primary.
And how do you win a Republican primary in Arkansas? According to Hendren, it's by prioritizing provocative and hot topic bills.
If you ask people what they remember about the last session, they're going to talk about abortion and guns and transgender legislation. And while all of us have different opinions on those things, our day-to-day lives, for the most part, aren't nearly as impacted by that as the 250,000 people who go home to no broadband. So we're not saying those issues should be ignored, but what we're saying is we need to focus and spend more time focusing on the issues that affect all of us in a day-to-day way.
But unfortunately, that's not how campaign ads get made.
Those type of issues have a lot of passion in a Republican primary electorate. And so we continue to see issues that strengthen a person's position on reelectability to be the focus rather than issues that affect maybe not be as exciting and then not get the front page news, but really make a difference in people's quality of life.
Hendren says there are different ideas of how to improve our state, whether that means adjusting the tax code or using money from the surplus to directly fund these improvements.
There's not necessarily a right or wrong on every policy decision, but many times today's politics try to make it that. They try to say, if you don't agree with me, not only are you wrong, we demonize you and make you an enemy. This policy discussion that we're having now is exactly a perfect example. There's not a right or wrong about what the tax rate should be or how much the state should invest in some of these programs. We need to find people who are willing to acknowledge the fact that what's most important is that we move forward. I may not get everything I think is the best answer, and you may not get everything you think is the best answer, but we're going to have a discussion and we're going to find common ground, areas that we do agree on, and move forward together. Right now, that's getting more and more difficult. The state legislature is beginning to look more and more like Congress in the way that we've partisanized everything, if that's even a word. But we've made everything about us and them. We discourage bipartisan cooperation, and it makes it more difficult to find those areas where let's find where the circles overlap, and we both agree that this needs to be done and move forward on that together.
Hendren and his organization, Common Ground, is planning on being heavily involved with the 2022 election cycle.
We believe there is a huge hunger in Arkansas for pragmatism, for problem solving, and potentially for less screaming at each other. And that's what we're going to work to change in 22.
Much of their focus will be on state representatives and state senator races across the state, which will look different after some redistricting.
A lot of people don't know every single member of the legislature is up for election in 22, and that only happens every 10 years. Usually just half the Senate is up. But now – and there's going to be new House districts and new Senate districts up in northwest Arkansas, central Arkansas, and northeast Arkansas. And some of the districts in the south are going to get larger and incumbents are going to have to run against each other. 22 is going to be a pivotal election cycle for Arkansas.
An election cycle that will be filled with Arkansas Republicans who, unlike Hendren, have no issue keeping the R nestled behind their name on the ballots.
Are you discouraged at all that more Republicans, whether in the Arkansas legislature or, you know, nationwide, didn't take the stance that you took after January 6th?
I wouldn't say I'm discouraged. I think I'm disappointed sometimes in people who I respect advocating for things they know to be untrue. And really, that was a deal breaker for me. It wasn't so much the people who charged in to the Capitol. It was the political leaders of my party who stirred them to that point by continuing to repeat what they wanted to hear, which was that the election was stolen, that there was fraud, and all of these things that they knew not to be the case, but for political purposes were willing to spew that kind of rhetoric and enrage this crowd to the point where they stormed the Capitol. That was my fundamental problem, is the unwillingness of people to acknowledge the truth. So yeah, I'm disappointed to the point where I felt like I had to leave the party. But I'll also say I have a lot of good friends that are still in the Republican Party. Probably people know my uncle's the governor, and he certainly has spent his life building the Republican Party in Arkansas. And he's doing what he can from inside the Republican Party, as is Congressman Kinzinger from Illinois, and as is Liz Cheney and some others who are trying to acknowledge the truth and return the Republican Party to the principles that it used to stand on. I got to the point where, for me personally, I did not think that was a winnable fight and one that I was willing to continue to wage from inside the Republican Party. So no, I wouldn't say I'm discouraged. I would say there are many who have disappointed me, particularly when they refuse to acknowledge the truth, regardless of the effect that has on our democracy.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Matthew Moore.
And ahead on today's Ozarks, Fayetteville and Eureka Springs Pride celebrations this year are more than virtual. We'll get some previews. And a correction from yesterday. I said educators rallying for the right to teach all of United States history without proposals limiting the framing of discussions about racism, inequity, and discrimination took place in Fayetteville, when that rally actually took place at the Trail of Tears marker in Springdale. We regret that error. KUAF continues to make inroads on our June goal of $35,000 raised during this final month of our fiscal year. We've received contributions of almost $24,000, and we welcome 14 new members. That is toward our goal of 50 new supporters of KUAF enrolled this month in honor of 50 years of NPR programming. If it's your turn for a first ever gift to KUAF, we have incentives, like the fact that your support in the amount you choose keeps us strong and independent and able to continue to bring you programs like Here and Now, All Things Considered, This American Life, and, yes, Ozarks at Large. And another incentive. KUAF supporter Lana Arbuthnot of Hiwassee is offering a dollar-for-dollar challenge to new gifts pledged this month. We still have about $400 left on that challenge. So your first gift to KUAF, if it's made this month, in the amount that you choose, will be matched, doubled, actually, of up to $400 right now. You can make your contribution for a first time, for a continuation of longtime support, or in honor of someone you love, all at supportkuaf.com. And thank you.
Support for KUAF comes from Woodstone Pizza, located on South School Avenue and Uptown on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville. Wood-fired pizzas, salads, local beers, and wines are available for dine-in and curbside from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. WoodstoneCraftPizza.com for menus and more. KUAF is giving away tickets to the 2021 Spaceberry Music Festival, July 1st through the 3rd, on the farm in Eureka Springs. This three-day festival of music, fireworks, and camping welcomes Talk, One Way Traffic, Monk is King, and more. Winners announced Friday, June 25th, during Ozarks at Large. KUAF.com for registration and more information. Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art, offering the return of live music with the Forest Concert Series each Saturday evening throughout the summer, featuring national and local musicians playing outdoors in the museum's North Forest. Tickets and information at crystalbridges.org.
This is Ozarks at Large. Fort Smith will soon be home to an Air Force training squadron from Singapore. The project, which was announced last month, could generate up to $1 billion in revenue for the region. But first, the city has to make some expensive adjustments. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth reports.
Last week, the city of Fort Smith approved $5 million to extend the runway at Ebbing Air National Guard Base to accommodate fighter jets coming to the city for a new training mission. The city's board of directors unanimously voted last Tuesday to commit the money from the city's general fund for the 1,300-foot extension. This is part of $22 million needed to secure the military training program at the airbase for foreign military sales partners.
And it's to train pilots for those countries that have purchased our aircraft, our military aircraft, and that includes not only the F-16, but also the F-35. And there are several countries who will need this training. The first country up is Singapore.
That's Fort Smith City Administrator Carl E. Gefkin. He says the Fort Smith Regional Airport, which encompasses the airbase, has already begun designs for the runway extension. He says the F-16 and F-35 aircrafts will need at least 9,400 feet of runway for the training mission. Right now, the airport's runway is 8,100 feet long.
So, and that's, you know, this is not just building a road. This is building a very heavy-duty, 14-inch thick ribbon of concrete that is also 150 feet wide, and then have to move or replace the landing items and all of the equipment that, you know, help direct planes to land on the runway.
He says the $5 million being used for the extension comes from the city's unallocated general funds.
We've been careful with our money. Our sales taxes have been coming in better than than initially projected because we budget conservatively. So we have the what we call fund balance for projects, either internal to the city or projects like this to helping extend the runway. So because we had the money, we're able to now reinvest that into the city of Fort Smith in order to receive that large boost in economic activity.
Gefkin says the project, which will be overseen by the Airport Authority, has already gotten approval from Governor Asa Hutchinson, who moved to allocate the remaining $17 million from the state earlier this month.
And it became clear to me that we probably were not going to be successful in getting this mission if we did not provide a pathway to get that additional runway.
Ebbing was selected out of five sites to host the mission and will hold up to 36 fighter aircrafts, according to the Air Force. On June 3rd, the governor announced the selection and said the project will bring in 825 people, including 345 U.S. military personnel, a unit of 180 pilots from Singapore, and nearly 300 dependents. And Gefkin says the economic impact of a mission like this is estimated around $1 billion per year.
This is akin to a once-in-a-lifetime economic development project, because when you have the ability to use or have an existing asset, our airport, our Air National Guard, that has had F-16s here before and the A-10s, when you have a mission that can generate that level of economic activity, when initially the Singaporean military officers and trainees come, it's not just the city of Fort Smith. It's Fort Smith, the River Valley region, Northwest Arkansas. It is really a no-brainer of a project.
And for Governor Asa Hutchinson, the Air Force training project satisfies a long-term goal to recruit more industry to the state. At a press conference announcing the Singaporean F-35 mission earlier this month, he said the military advisory committee that he put in place during his first term in office helped boost the state's military assets and eventually landed the project in Fort Smith.
And the design was that economic development is about creating and recruiting industry and growth of our existing industry here, but we've never concentrated and made our military installations a recognized part of economic development. Our Military Affairs Committee changed that.
The runway is set to be operational by June of 2023, when the Singaporean squadron is expected to arrive in the region. And Gefkin says preparation for the project is about more than just readying the airbase.
And it's not just extending a runway, but it's also making sure that all of the infrastructure, the homes and such, are here for the Singaporean military that will be coming here. And that's going to be about 500 people, as well as the United States military people that will be located here, who will be doing the training and fueling the jets and doing everything like that. So, but as it pertains to the runway, there's 2 years. The mission is projected to come to Ebbing Air National Guard, the 188th, in June of 2023.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Participation in Pride Weekend and the annual Pride Parade in Fayetteville grew in the late teens. Richard Gathright, the director of Northwest Arkansas Pride, says in 2018, the Pride Parade jumped from a previous attendance of 6,000 people to 15,000. Then in 2019, an estimated 20,000 people lined up along Dixon Street for the parade. 2020, nothing. The pandemic meant no parade and only virtual events. So what to expect for the 2021 Pride Parade in Fayetteville this Saturday? Richard Gathright says,
I'm not sure, to be perfectly honest with you. I think we're going to have a very large attendance. I'm not sure how many people are going to show up, but I think we're going to have a lot of people show up this year.
That growth has taken place in recent years, the years when there could be a parade. because the parade draws people from outside of Northwest Arkansas and from neighboring states and beyond.
I mean, we've even had people from Utah, from Georgia, from elsewhere in the country. We get a lot of people from Texas. We have a lot of folks that have moved to Texas over the years, and they always seem to want to come back for Pride. So, yeah, I mean, I think we're going to see a great influx of folks from all over the place just to come to this Pride Parade.
The 2021 parade comes as Arkansas's public health emergency has been lifted, but also when the state is severely lagging behind other states when it comes to the number of people who are vaccinated. And health officials have expressed concerns about unvaccinated residents contracting COVID-19 as variants of the virus are suspected of increasing in number. Richard Gathright says the planning for the 2021 Pride celebration has been an evolving process. He says the permitting for public events like the parade began with the city months ago, which even now is a seemingly much different time.
We're not going to have the festival or the rally or some of the other corresponding events that we normally have just because when we're basically on plan E at this point. So we've been through a lot and settled on this, and we're going to make it work this year. So, yeah, the parade will kick off at noon this Saturday going down Dixon Street. We have maxed out our allotted slots for the parade this year, so we're totally full. There will be at least 75 groups marching down Dixon Street, limited to 15 people per group with our agreement with the city this year.
There will be some other events this weekend. Comic Mateo Lane will perform Friday night at 8 at the Fayetteville Town Center. And Thursday night, tomorrow night, Northwest Arkansas Pride will host a trans march. Jewel Hayes, and Northwest Arkansas Pride board member at large, says as far as the organization can tell, this is the first trans march in Arkansas history.
We want to, give trans people a voice and be there for the community also to help everyone grow in their freedom of expression.
Hayes says the march is open to all.
It will be a bunch of trans people and non-binary people, just people under that umbrella, and anyone who wants to come and participate and march with us. And then we will have guest speakers from things like the ACLU and trans women, trans women of color speaking, just trying to give a opportunity to say what we want to say as trans people.
The march tomorrow night begins at 7 by the loading dock at Walton Arts Center, though people will start lining up between 6 and 6:30. Marchers will go up Dixon Street, turn right on Block, and then end at the Town Center. Saturday's Pride Parade will feature Ruth Coker Burks, an Arkansas-based writer and activist for people with HIV and AIDS, as Grand Marshal. And the parade honoree is Evelyn Rio Stafford of Fayetteville, who, as a member of the Washington County Quorum Court, is the first openly trans elected official in Arkansas. The 17th annual Pride Parade begins at noon Saturday and will travel along Dixon Street in Fayetteville. And the Pronoun Trans Art exhibit continues through the end of the month at Phoenix Arts and is co-curated by Jewel Hayes. Jewel Hayes and Richard Gathright came to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio earlier this week. Eureka Springs, which has been called at times the gayest small town in America, is also celebrating Pride this month. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich tells us more.
Americans are celebrating LGBTQ plus Pride Month this June, staging parades, parties, and picnics due to the pandemic. However, many Pride events were canceled last year, including in Eureka Springs, a popular LGBTQ plus getaway. This year, says Jay Wilkes, director of Out in Eureka, which sponsors seasonal diversity weekends, the town is welcoming Pride visitors.
We have 71 businesses that are owned within the LGBTQ plus community. And that ranges from restaurants to hotels to venues and to services.
Services provided by tax accountants, printers, realtors, and herbalists, as well as many B&Bs, resorts, galleries, gift, and apparel shops in town. And this year, a local lodge is hosting a Pride celebration.
On Friday, June 25th, the Wanderoo Lodge and the Gravel Bar, they're hosting, it's called the Friends of Dorothy and Martha P. Johnson Pride Event at 5 p.m., and it's free, and it's a small Pride celebration for anybody in Eureka Springs or Northwest Arkansas that would like to come and join for our Pride Month.
Wilkes says as much as one-third of the town's adult population now identify as LGBTQ+, and more are moving to Eureka Springs, population 2100, to work remotely, open a business, or retire.
Even when town started to reopen late last April, we not only saw an influx of tourists from within the LGBT plus community, but we did see some new businesses open that are owned by LGBT plus members, which was exciting because, you know, to take a risk to move to a new town and open up a business during a pandemic, you know, but it turned out to be great. And, you know, so we like to see all these new businesses come in, whether they're from the LGBT plus community or from others.
So far this month, Wilkes, who lives downtown, says he's seen lots of Pride visitors, some venturing out for the first time since the pandemic was declared 15 months ago.
And our street is a main thoroughfare from downtown up to the Upper Loop, where you have Ermelio's, or you can get to the Crescent Hotel there. So we see a lot of gay couples, lesbian couples, walk up and down our street from downtown up to, you know, the different restaurants on the Upper Loop. So, yeah, so we've seen quite a few.
Wilkes is also planning the annual Fall Diversity Weekend, November 5th through the 7th, canceled last year, one of three seasonal celebrations of LGBTQ plus culture in Eureka, now that the town mayor declared that the issuance of public events permits will resume.
Well, I received the news on Thursday from the mayor's office that permits were being issued, and that my permits, the permits were out in Eureka to have our Diversity Weekend in the park, and also our events at the auditorium had been released, and I was ecstatic, you know, not only for myself, but for the other events that we have here in the fall. And so it was a great feeling knowing that we can proceed forward with this.
Wilkes says it's a consequence of the pandemic and biased national and state politics targeting LGBTQ plus culture. Eureka offers respite to individuals, couples, and families.
Eureka's always been welcoming and still is, of those from the LGBTQ plus community. And so, you know, they know that they can come here and we're going to wrap our arms around them. You know, whether they just need to get away just for a weekend, they can come to Eureka and be themselves and not have to worry about the outside world while they're in our little village.
You can learn more about Pride and diversity events in Eureka Springs on Out in Eureka on Facebook. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Memories of the University of Arkansas for alums can differ depending on a chosen major. For example, engineering graduates have far more memories in Bell Engineering than other students, but one building shares memories across disciplines, the Student Union. This week, Charlie Allison, the executive editor of University Relations at the U of A, continues his survey of the first 150 years of the University of Arkansas. And he does so with a salute to the Student Union's place in campus history.
Most of the buildings on the University of Arkansas campus fall into a few categories. Academic buildings that house classrooms, labs, performance spaces, and administrative offices. The next are the residential and dining facilities. Then the athletic and recreation facilities. And last, there is one category in which only one building seems to fit. That would be the Arkansas Union, the center of social interaction and civic engagement for students, staff, and faculty. The Union isn't the first building on campus to fill that function, though. The earliest was a building erected during World War I. It was built by and for the soldiers in the Student Army Training Corps. As part of their training, the soldiers built several structures. Among them were a concrete sidewalk to replace the flagstone path running from Old Main to the corner of Arkansas Avenue and Dixon Street. Also, a two-story frame physics hall southwest of Old Main. And finally, a soldier's recreational hut erected southeast of Old Main, parallel to the new sidewalk. The hut was financed by the War Council of the National YMCA, or the Young Men's Christian Association. It included a spacious hall with a large fireplace and, equally important, if not more so, a Victrola phonograph to play music. The Soldiers' Lounge became the center of social activity on campus during the war, and afterward it became known as the YMCA Hut, and it served the same purpose for a half dozen years before it was torn down. During the 1930s, the need for a student union was recognized, and President John C. Futrell came up with a plan to build one if the university students were willing to help pay for the building. The Associated Student Government and the student newspaper promoted the plan, in which each student would pay a fee of $2 per year. Well, the student body approved the funding plan, which made it possible for the university to receive loans and grants from the Public Works Administration. Just before it was finished, President Futrell was killed in a car wreck while coming back to campus from Little Rock. As a result, the new student union was named Futrell Memorial Hall in his honor. The words student union had already been chiseled across the entrance to the building, and so that became the more commonly used name for it. Don Schaefer, in his History of University Buildings, described Memorial Hall as being trimmed with Indiana white limestone and an ashlar of Batesville limestone. It blended with the other buildings being built in that period, too. The front of the building is of a collegiate Gothic design, while the remainder of the structure is sort of a mixed Gothic and classical revival. As you walk inside, the lobby offers a beautiful example of Art Deco design and excellent workmanship for the 1930s. When it opened in 1940, it offered students a recreational room, a bookstore, a post office, and a kitchen. On the main floor, there were a student lounge, union offices, a hat and coat check room, and a large two-story ballroom with an orchestra shell. The second floor had a game room and offices for student publications and student government as well. During the first semester of its operation, the sales at the soda fountain provided the largest source of income for the union, more than $6,600, but also the largest expense in fountain supplies. The student dances only brought in $172, about $50 shy of what was spent on them. The following year, students crammed into a lounge to listen to the formal declaration of America's entry into World War II. Students met at the union on a daily basis to help roll bandages to be used by the Red Cross during the war. Anna Applegate, chair of the All-University War Bond and Stamp Drive, sold war bonds at the entrance. This building gave the campus a focal point upon which students and alumni could converge upon for the next 33 years. Not that all the comparisons were favorable. The author Don Harrington, while he was a student, wrote a story about getting a haircut at the barbershop at the Student Union. He wrote, quote, "This writer, on the suggestion of a close friend, walked into the Student Union barbershop recently and asked that his long hair be shortened to a degree that could readily be called a crew cut. The barber returned a look of surprise mixed with anguish, which indicated that either he thought the undertaking impossible or he was unaccustomed to such a difficult task. Well, after the haircut, Harrington wrote that the near-bald fellow that stared back at him in the mirror wasn't the same person that had come in earlier. And he wrote, thereafter followed a ceaseless stream of suffering on the author's part." That early student union was also a showcase for such notable speakers as First Lady Eleanor Roosevelt, and for such odd performances as that of Cowboy Ray Thornton playing his guitar while asking students to elect him president of student government. Somehow the cowpoke shtick worked, and then many years later, Thornton became president of the university itself. Another future president of the university, Alan Sugg, was the supervisor of Memorial Hall for several years in the 1960s before he, too, moved on to university administrative roles. Ironically, Memorial Hall had only been open a little over a decade before university officials began contemplating construction of a new, bigger student union, and they even picked out a location for it by 1952. Well, it took another 20 years to get the new Arkansas Union built. It opened in 1973 with more than 160,000 square feet of space. Coincidentally, Manhattan Construction Company, which had built the first student union, was the low bidder for the new union. The new, larger space included a bookstore as well, a supply store, a ballroom, a retail mall, a post office, a theater, the Ann Kittrell Gallery, and a food court that could seat 1,000 people at one time, and it included an outdoor terrace with a beautiful view of the treetops. In 1975, the Arkansas Union was one of 8 national winners of design awards from the Concrete Reinforcing Steel Institute. It didn't hurt that the design required acres of thick concrete, giving it the feel of a boulder that will never be moved. Over the years, the Arkansas Union played host to a variety of entertainment sources. Musicians such as the renowned guitarist Leo Kottke and the virtuoso trumpeter Dizzy Gillespie. Speakers such as James Watson, the co-discoverer of the DNA double helix structure. Or an illusionist such as the amazing Kreskin. And of course, there were perennial showings of the Rocky Horror Picture Show near Halloween. It's just a jump to the left, and then a step to the right. During the 1970s, the Foreign Film Festival got in a spot of trouble for showing films that were perhaps too European. During the 1980s, the big once-a-year event was called Red Eye, an all-night extravaganza of games like Musical Twister. Today, Friday Night Live offers students a similar experience, taking you to the carnivales of Latin America one week, and then Soul Night during Black History Month the next. In the mid-1990s, the Arkansas Union was expanded to the east over Garland Avenue to create the International Connections Lounge and the two-story Student Activity Center with what is informally known as the Big Living Room. There isn't a Victrola, but there is a fireplace. In 2013, a publication called Best College Reviews rated the Arkansas Union as one of the 25 most amazing student unions in the nation. And the building continues to evolve with the times as needed. For instance, two popular spots were added in the last decade after the U of A bookstore moved out: the Technology Center and an Exercise Center. The former feeds minds hungry for technology with gaming, programming, and creative resources, and the latter stimulates the physical body with ellipticals, treadmills, free weights, and even a small dance studio. So when you think of the student union, don't think about what is, but rather what might come to be. From the ripping bebop sound of Gillespie to a heart-thumping workout session, to the soft, wafting sound of Donald Harrington's mop of hair falling to the barber's floor.
Charlie Allison is executive editor of University Relations at the University of Arkansas, and he's taking us on tours of the first 150 years of the U of A existence almost every Wednesday. You can learn more about the celebrations and observations connected to the university's sesquicentennial at 150.uark.edu.
Ozarks at Large is underwritten, in part, by the Walton Family Charitable Support Foundation. Support for KUAF comes from Woodstone Pizza, located on South School Avenue and Uptown on Mall Avenue in Fayetteville. Wood-fired pizzas, salads, local beers, and wines are available for dine-in and curbside from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. Tuesday through Sunday. WoodstoneCraftPizza.com for menus and more.
This is Ozarks at Large. Werewolves may not be as plentiful on screen as their horror brethren like vampires and zombies, but since the days of Lon Chaney Jr., werewolves have held their own. A new movie, Werewolves Within, offers nods to its predecessors. And Courtney Lanning, film critic with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, says she enjoyed the film. With me, Courtney, you liked it.
I did.
Tell me about Werewolves Within.
Werewolves Within is not a movie that a lot of people are going to see. It's not getting a big wide release, and it's coming out the same week as Fast and Furious 9. But it's worth seeing. It's going to have a limited release in some theaters. You'll have to check and see if yours is getting it. And it's going to streaming relatively quick afterwards. So this is just a fun monster movie with a lot of callbacks to old style, non-horror, but still very much fun monster movies.
Okay, so to make sure, there are werewolves.
Yes.
And you say it's fun.
It is.
Give me an example of how it's fun.
So this is a murder mystery type of movie, and it's smarter than you would give it credit for. Because if you told somebody a movie is about a werewolf attack, they're not thinking that it's going to have a high-level intelligence attached to it. But this is sort of a combination of Schitt's Creek and Knives Out.
Okay,
which
I like this.
The strangest thing. It's a small town in rural New England, and park ranger named Finn is just moving in. A snowstorm hits and knocks out all the power, and then people start dying one by one due to werewolf attacks.
It sounds as if you're describing, with the nods and the comparison to Schitt's Creek and Knives Out, that it might be kind of stylish?
Yeah, and there's a lot of really cool creative camera angles. The cinematography, again, surprises you for what should have been a by-the-numbers monster movie, but the whole time the camera and the style angles are done, so you're constantly trying to figure out who is the werewolf. As my wife and I were watching it, right at the start, we each took bets on who we thought the werewolf would be. I ended up being right.
Of course. You mentioned to me when we were getting ready for this conversation, it's in the sort of mode of Tremors, that movie about the giant worms?
Right. I think early 90s, Kevin Bacon,
yeah.
Reba McEntire.
That's right, Reba McEntire.
And
Michael Gross from Family Ties.
Michael Gross.
Yes.
A good movie. I like the Tremors series a lot. And I'd say it floats just above the B-movie status. Like, you know, this isn't quite Evil Dead. It had a better budget. And it's smarter than your standard B-movie. But again, I think it's going to fly under the radar for a lot of people.
And we should point out, you have mentioned on a couple of our visits, you're not a fan of horror movies.
No.
Scary movies.
No, I don't like to be scared. But this is a horror comedy. So if you think along the terms of Scream or Fright Night, it's not there to scare you. There's dark elements, but there's not even a lot of blood in this movie for it being a movie about a werewolf killing a town of people.
Okay, just because I want to get the younger demo, maybe like Abbott and Costello?
Yeah, absolutely. When you finally do see the werewolf, it's a pretty retro design werewolf. This isn't some big hulking CGI monster. The movie deals a lot more with practical effects. And the werewolf does look almost like a callback to Abbott Costello's Wolfman.
All right. This sounds good. It's called Werewolves Within, and you mentioned it's in a limited release, but I can't find it streaming on my TV right now, right?
No, I think it goes to streaming on July 2nd, but this Friday it will be available in select theaters. You're just going to have to get on Fandango or AMC's website or wherever you look for your tickets.
Theatrical-only release. That is old school. It's like it's 2018.
Right.
All right, you mentioned that it'll be under the radar because it's coming out at the same time as some other movies, including
F9, the new Fast and the Furious movie. I'm never a huge fan of car movies, even when Pixar is animating them. But my mother-in-law, Christy, is a huge fan of the Fast and the Furious series. Giant fan base. I expect it's going to give fans exactly what they want. They've got the formula down after 9 movies.
You would think, yes.
And I'm sure it's going to be a big blockbuster hit.
And from the moments in this franchise I've seen, it's not just cars. It's like tanks and helicopters and battleships.
And explosions.
Yes.
And muscles and
yes.
Guns.
Yes. All right, so F9 comes out and another one.
Right. Also on Friday coming to Netflix is sort of, I guess it's Netflix's answer to Fast 9. It's called The Ice Road, and it's got Liam Neeson and Lawrence Fishburne. It's about a group of miners who get trapped at a remote mining site, and Liam Neeson has to put together a group of truck drivers to take out pipes and other equipment, but they've got to travel across 300 miles of ice, and some of it might be thawed in a giant lake, and it looks pretty silly, but it could be a good way to spend 2 hours.
And that's on Netflix, so I could see that at home.
Right, on Friday.
My money is on Liam Neeson getting out of this predicament.
It wouldn't surprise me if he did. It's very difficult to kill Liam Neeson.
As we have learned over and over. Right. So what will you be reviewing for us next week?
So next week I will bring you a review of a new sci-fi blockbuster that's called The Tomorrow War, starring Chris Pratt.
Yes, yes. And of course he's famous for Parks and Recreation, the Jurassic Park second sort of series of movies.
The Guardians of the Galaxy.
He's Star-Lord and Guardians of the Galaxy. And this they've got some money behind this one.
Yes, this is going to be what looks to be a giant summer sci-fi blockbuster hit.
All right. Thumbs up, though, to Werewolves Within.
Thumbs up to Werewolves Within. It's a howling good time.
Courtney Lanning likes puns and is a film critic with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Your full review of Werewolves Within in Friday's paper?
Yep. Check it out in the Arkansas Democrat Gazette.
During our June fundraiser, ask yourself one important question. Does public radio matter to me enough to support it? Think about it. When you support KUAF, you help produce all the national and international coverage of Morning Edition and All Things Considered, and local coverage on Ozarks at Large. You help initiate the formative conversations on 1A and Fresh Air, and you help create enlightening diversions with Radiolab, This American Life, and The Pick and Post. Your support helps fund all of this and more. You can't put a price on that. It is invaluable. But you can decide to give what you are able to. You can decide to support this public service that you depend on every day. Make your gift now at supportkuaf.com, and thanks.
And thanks for your support of KUAF, Ozarks at Large, and Public Radio this month and for the past 35 plus years. Obviously, we would not be here without you. We do appreciate it very much. By the way, you can stay up to date with news from across the region and from around the state each morning, each weekday morning at 5:30 and 7:30 with Antoinette Grajeda's newscasts. There is another increase in new COVID-19 cases for Oklahoma today. The Oklahoma State Department of Health is counting 265 new cases in this morning's test results. That's an increase by more than 100 new cases compared to yesterday's reporting. There's also an additional 8 deaths from the virus being reported in Oklahoma today. Professionals interested in creating inclusive, equitable workplaces can now register for an online conference hosted by the University of Arkansas Ideals Institute and Global Campus in Bentonville. This will take place October 7th. Online registration can be found right now at training.uark.edu. Participants will learn from experts and engage in small group discussions to explore the current social climate and its impact on advancing equity and inclusion in workplaces and communities. Early bird registration cost, $230 per person through July 30th.
It's the Community Spotlight on KUAF. I'm Pete Hartman. Today, joined with Charlie Shields. She's Marketing Director with the UA Press. Charlie, nice to talk to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
We're hearing from you because y'all have just recently announced y'all's fall lineup of books. But first, I wanted to ask you the history of the UA Press. And one question in particular, can only Arkansans be published by the UA Press?
No. In fact, anyone can be published by the U of A Press, and we have authors from all over the country. Well, the University of Arkansas Press was founded in 1980 by Miller Williams, the celebrated poet, and Willard Gatewood, who is a historian. And one of the first poets that Miller Williams published was Billy Collins, who, of course, went on to be U.S. Poet Laureate.
Just a few days ago, y'all announced the fall lineup of published titles, 11 new titles. We're talking about stuff from African American studies, poetry, political science, really runs the spectrum.
One book I'm particularly excited about is Guy Lancaster's new book. It's a sort of a short treatise on lynching. Guy Lancaster has written extensively on racial violence in his career, and this new book explores the ways that lynching encompasses five different types of violence. So it's really a new framework for exploring the history of lynching. And he's taking a multidisciplinary approach to looking at lynching to give it more context. We also have a new book by the photographers Sabine Schmidt and Don House. They spent 3 years traveling around the state of Arkansas and documenting small public libraries. And that's called Remote Access. And so Sabine Schmidt took color photos of the libraries and the small communities around them. And Don House took black and white portraits of the people who worked in the libraries and came into the libraries to use the library. And so it's really a book about small town life and the role that libraries play in those people's lives in the 21st century. One of the other books I'm really excited about is a political science book by Jason Kirk, and it's called Rising Star, The Meaning of Nikki Haley, Trump's Unlikely Ambassador. And more than a biography of Nikki Haley, Jason Kirk looks at the perspectives of other people that have of Nikki Haley to show that she's a significant rising figure in American politics. And so it looks at the ways that her identity has shaped her role in the Republican Party.
Speaking with Charlie Shields, marketing director with the U of A Press, you know, I'm only guessing that each time there's another lineup of published works that come out of the U of A Press, I'm guessing it's part of your job to read these, huh?
Oh, absolutely. You definitely want to dive into them and get a good idea of what each book is about.
Can I just say you've got one of the coolest jobs I've ever heard?
It's an amazing job, and we really love to do it. The best way to get information about our new books and our, you know, extensive backlist is to visit our website. It's uapress.com.
Charlie Shields, marketing director with the UA Press, located there on the campus here in Fayetteville. Thanks for letting us know about these really interesting titles coming out.
Thank you so much for having me, Pete.
The Community Spotlight and KUAF, Local Matters.
This is your public radio station, 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. KUAF Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Huntsville. Contributors today included Matthew Moore, Daniel Carruth, Jacqueline Froelich, and Courtney Lanning. The Community Spotlight is hosted and produced by Pete Hartman. A new edition can be heard tomorrow morning at 6:30 and 8:30 on KUAF. Additional content for our Wednesday show came from our colleagues at KUAR, Public Radio for Little Rock and Central Arkansas. Our theme is written and performed by Daryl Sean. We'll be back with you tomorrow at noon and 7 p.m. for a brand new Ozarks at Large. From the Carver Center for Public Radio, I'm Kyle Kellums.